Man, I really got to cut down on the amount of cups I have on over here. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast. A little bit of a different view for this one. I have my standing desk in the upmost position, I guess you could say. I was going to use a different word, but anyways, welcome back. So, what's the deal? Did you stick to your New Year's resolutions? If so, good job, man or woman. Keep it up. Keep getting after it. But if you didn't, that's unfortunate and you suck. Just kidding. You don't suck, obviously. As I explained before, New Year's resolutions don't work as well as we might think or hope. And you really shouldn't hope. You should just make it happen. And in the last episode, I kind of left some things on the table that I could have probably answered had I put more time into this and actually done some research to give y'all some tools for success in your New Year's goals journeys, if you will. So, you know, if you didn't stick to your goals, what happened? Did you go back and give in to Temptation Tiger, which I'm going to have to explain now because that's kind of a funny thing to say. Temptation Tiger is something that is actually covered in this book, which we are going to just drop my sticky notes, but I'm going to walk you through some of the tools that I found to be really useful in this book. It is called Embrace the Suck. Some of y'all, longtime listeners and friends of mine, will know this is something that I used to say quite often. And I stopped saying it at the end of the episodes because I thought it was kind of cheesy and cringy. But Embrace the Suck has a lot of meaning to me now more than ever. And it's something that I used to say due to my military experience. But now I think I'm going to bring it back because I had kind of forgotten about embracing the suck. And I've said this many times before. I think that as a society, we are all getting kind of too soft. Being someone that works remotely, it can be challenging to succumb to the treasures of Temptation Tiger and stay sedentary. So Temptation Tiger is based off of a real story about a gentleman in Russia who was a hunter, and he decided it would be a great idea to steal a kill from an Amur tiger. And my friend Nick actually showed me a book about this from a journalist who was in Russia when he wrote this book. And it's really kind of funny that I ran into the same story about him, about this tiger. The hunter's name was Vladimir Markov. He was selfish and a misguided poacher, ironically also a bookkeeper, which is pretty funny, who met his grisly end in the winter of 97 after he shot and wounded a tiger and then stole part of the tiger's kill. If you don't know anything about Amur tigers, they are definitely vengeful. And if you mess with one, it will hunt you until it ends up killing you. Like, it'll remember you, it'll stalk you, and it'll just follow you to the ends of the earth and just destroy you, which is exactly what happened to Mr. Markov here. But anyways, Temptation Tiger is pretty much what it sounds like, right? He was tempted to take something from this Amur tiger, and he basically let his temptation get the best of him. So, long story short, we all have temptations in our life. You know, those delicious donuts that are at the coffee shop every day that you drive by it, you get a coffee with cream and sugar, and then you get a donut or two or three, depending on what the deal of the day is. And believe me, I'm no stranger to eating donuts. Like I said before, I think you should have a donut once you have learned the discipline needed so that you don't get the five donuts for $3 and you could just get one donut for $2 or what have you. So, Taming Temptation Tiger is an exercise in this book, and I figured I should get into that before I get into the topic. But clearly define your goals, write them down, make them specific and time-bound. So, if you want to pay your car, figure out how much you have left to pay, how much you can afford to pay additionally per month, and how long it's going to take you to pay your car off, right? Visualize winning. This is directly from the book. Visualize achieving your goal and work backward to define the roadmap. This is similar to backwards planning. If you've ever been in the military, you state what your end state would be for the training exercise or, you know, field training exercise, what have you. And then you kind of work backwards from there. Oh, hey, we want to clear this building. How are we going to get there? Okay, the, you know, transport element is going to drop us off a kilometer away from the target. From there, we're going to walk in, you know, through this type of terrain. What's the weather going to be like? what are the conditions of the enemy, what are their weapons capabilities, stuff like that. Obstacles. Identify behaviors, actions, tendencies, and people that stand in your way. That's right. Sometimes people stand in your way and you got to say, move, bitch, get out the way. Remove roadblocks. This part sucks. Do it anyways. Eliminate obstacles listed. So once you list all your obstacles in step three, this is a five-step process in case you're wondering. But remove roadblocks. This part sucks. Do it anyway. So anything that you think is going to get in the way of you taming Temptation Tiger, talking about having delicious fat kid treats in your in your cabinet, having some, what are those things called? They're like the Hostess cups, but they're in Spanish. I bought them for my wife the other day because I couldn't eat them. I still can't. And I was like, oh, penguins. I was like, here, have some penguinos. She was like, what are these? And I explained to her. So get rid of the penguinos in your damn cabinet, your snack cabinet, snack drawer. Empty those out. Get rid of them. Donate them. Something. Give them to the homeless guy down the street begging for change. I don't care what you do with them. Get them at your house if they're a roadblock. If you know you don't have the discipline to not eat all the penguinos, get rid of them. Number five, really important, unfuck yourself. Yep. Develop a plan for rapid course correction when you deviate. This doesn't mean like, you know, do something self-deprecating, harm yourself, anything like that. Maybe give yourself some kind of talk, you know, like, hey, dumbass, you fucked up. Time to pay the piper, you know, do some push-ups, go run the block, you know, do something to kind of get yourself to recognize, oh, hey, there should be a consequence for me, from myself, when I deviate from the course, right? So that's Temptation Tiger. Now, this book contains a lot of what the author, Brent Gleason, don't assault my home, please, Brent. He is a retired Navy SEAL who also is an entrepreneur, businessman, and he operates, along with his team, obviously, a management consulting company and like a team building company, and he is all around a badass motherfucker. So basically, the mental models in the book are like guidelines, rubrics, outlines, whatever you want to call them, that you can follow so you can apply the concepts described in the story previously in a chapter. They relate directly to the stories and how they were applied to overcome the adversity that Brent talks about. Obviously, in the SEAL teams, there's definitely some shitty things that you have to do, and you definitely have to embrace the mentality of transforming your pain and suffering into lessons and how to win, basically. So notably, in the beginning of the book, the first mental model is the pain transformation process. According to some psychologists who have studied victims of severe pain and emotional trauma, they claim to have gained an eye-opening perspective on life and become more responsible, more resilient, and even happier, quote directly from the book, as argued by Polish psychologist Kazimierz Dobro. Fear, anxiety, and sadness are not always undesirable or damaging states of mind, but rather representative of the necessary pain for psychological growth. Resilience is a skill that can be built up and trained just like any other skill or a muscle, and it all begins with changing your perspective on adversity, suffering, sucking, you know, in a not actually sucking something. Don't get your mind out of the gutter, damn it. So speaking on channeling your negative thoughts and energy about adversity into solutions to overcome these problems, one of the tools you can use is the Embrace the Suck 5-Step Root Cause Analysis Mental Model. Yeah, quite the mouthful. So take a moment, just real quickly, and I'll pause just so you can think about this, but take a moment and think about how much time you spend in your daily routine or in your daily lives or weekly, potentially, dwelling on why shitty things happen to you instead of actually thinking about what caused them and what you can do to remediate this situation, right? It's probably more often than you would probably be willing to admit. Trust me, I'm not a stranger to doing this. I'm definitely guilty of this. And I oftentimes find myself being, you know, talking or thinking in a deprecating manner and saying like, oh yeah, oh, this sucks that this happened. Oh wow, that whatever. But you really got to identify when these things happen and how they make you feel and what you can do to correct them, essentially. So using the 5-step root cause analysis described in the book, you can identify what led you to be in this shitty situation, like, for example, losing your job, getting dumped, I don't know, getting your car repossessed, etc. So step one, as described in the book, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't want to read verbatim everything and sound too robotic, but step one is identify the shitty thing, you know, getting your car revoked, repossessed by the bank or, you know, by a nice tow truck driver that you should probably be careful with because they're badass motherfuckers and they'll fuck you up. Give the shitty thing or event or situation a name, right? So, I don't know, give your repossession of your vehicle or thing a name. Step two, high-level cause. You need to identify the reason why this thing happened. So, did you have control over this thing? If there was a point of failure, where was it? And what were the things that led to this event that were totally outside of your scope of influence or your control, right? Step three, deep root cause. Use the five whys to identify, again, the level of impact that you may or may not have had in this event. And I'm actually going to cover the five whys after I finish telling you about the five-step root cause analysis. Step four, and this is pretty important, apply lessons learned. So what that means is, what did you learn from this event? And make a physical list of applicable lessons, right? You know, if you got your car repossessed, what led up to this event? Okay, maybe you spend too much money on Gucci bags or something. Maybe you buy Coach bags. You know, that's kind of sus if you're a man, honestly. I mean, I won't judge you, but that's not my thing. Maybe you buy too many expensive shoes or you eat out too much, like food-wise. Maybe you buy too many coffees at Starbucks, etc. You know, the list goes on, right? So you buy, you know, $37 coffees at Starbucks in a week, and then you're like, oh no, where the hell did my paycheck go? Maybe that's why your car got repossessed, you know? Start making coffee at home, buy creamer, you know, all that shit. And step five, what will you do next time you're faced with the same or similar situation? List your accountabilities, basically what you were responsible for that led up to the event, as I mentioned before. So the five whys is why, right? Why did this happen to me? Oh my God. Well, and this is also directly from the book. Well, I guess I could have taken more ownership over my role regardless of the lack of clarity provided by my manager, who's an asshole, by the way. So you got fired from the job. Why? There was a lack of clarity because it wasn't provided, but most importantly, I didn't ask. If you don't know something, ask. You know how your teacher always told you that there's no stupid questions? That's wrong. Just kidding. Some questions you should probably not ask, but overall, I don't think your manager or anyone's going to be really that mad at you for asking questions. Why? Because I'd been in this role for a year and felt unsafe in shedding light on the fact that I wasn't totally clear about my role or how I contributed to mission success. This is why it's important to ask why to your boss. Hey, what are my additional duties for this position? Why? I suppose my manager doesn't really foster an environment of psychological safety, but I was also relatively comfortable doing the bare minimum, right? Why? The star players who were all in had a lot more work to do and were always called upon to take on new projects. Those are the five whys that you need to ask yourself as part of fulfilling or completing the five-step root cause analysis. Another great mental model, very aptly named, is called suffering practices. Like I mentioned in the beginning, resilience can be learned, which is something that I didn't used to believe in until very recently. I thought like it was something that you're either born with or you're doomed to not have resiliency. And I'm kind of glad I read this book and experienced this. And I did actually practice some of the exercises in this book. Now that I finished reading it, I'm going to go back and really analyze these mental models and explore them in full. I've considered opening a Patreon or starting a Patreon. And if you guys want to see my use of these mental models for things in my life, let me know either by reviewing the podcast or shooting me a text if you have my number, or, you know, reaching out to me on Twitter, Facebook, if we're friends on Facebook, etc. But if you want to see these mental models applied to my situation so you can get an example of how they're supposed to look like, you should definitely buy the book, though. I'm going to link this in the description for the episode. I digress. Each chapter has a mental model preceded by a story, and kind of like the science. Brent's not a scientist, but there are references and resources in the back of the book in case you were wondering where he got all the information from. But basically, there's a story, and there's also quotes from philosophers, generals. Honestly, I really highly recommend that you pick up this book, regardless if you are in need of help, whether you are trying to come to terms with something tragic that's happened in your life recently, or you have, you know, you're angry or something, and you kind of just need to embrace the suck, so to speak, so that you can channel that anger and energy into becoming successful and putting your thoughts and everything else into something that's actually useful. But let me get a sip of water real quick. My voice is getting hoarse. Ugh, oops. Oh, well, I guess we're going dark. Oh, oops. This is actually supposed to be read from the book. See what happens when you don't prepare properly? That's why I have sticky notes. Hell yeah. Love me some sticky notes. Suffering practices. As some of y'all who listened to the last one will know, or will remember, that I started the 75 hard program, 75 days, 2 workouts a day, etc., etc. This suffering practices mental model talks about, basically, we have another great mental model, aptly named, practicing the things that suck. Next time I'll cover a couple really good ones and share a story that's very personal to me about why these mental models and practicing these things is so important. But stress and anxiety can be great tools if you know how to use them. If you choose to use them, with all the media and medical attention on the negative impacts of stress, it's easy to conclude that it's irredeemably bad, meaning there's like no good qualities to stress and suffering, something to be avoided at all costs. This applies to both physical and emotional stress and anxiety. Obviously, we feel differently about that because, as does Brent, I have a different perspective, as do many psychologists who are well-versed in this field. Pursuing stress-free life often causes more stress down the road. Problems compound, and when we fail to face our greatest challenges, we never overcome them. Right? Sound familiar? Think about a time when you experienced substantial personal and professional growth, or a time when you performed at your highest level, say finishing a race, building a business, or saving a struggling business, being accepted to your REACH school, right? You applied for a school you really wanted to go to. How did it feel when you got in there? Pretty fucking awesome, right? So for this mental model, it has 5 steps. I'm going to read you in brief what these are. Step 1 is you see it. Right? So we typically only stress about things we give a shit about. Obviously, the things you don't give a shit about just fly under the radar and you don't really think about them, right? Step 2, owning it. As Brent mentioned previously in the book, we usually only stress about things that matter to us. Step 1, owning this realization unleashes that positive aggression I keep referring to. Because deep down, we know that the things that really matter in life don't come easy. You think building a business is easy? It's definitely not. This guy's a bad motherfucker. Step 3, use it. So once you've acknowledged these things, use them. Though it often feels like it, the body's stress response was not designed to kill us. Very important to acknowledge that. In fact, the evolutionary goal of the stress response was to help boost the body and mind into enhanced functioning, to help us grow and meet the demands we face. And while the stress response can sometimes have adverse effects, in many cases, stress hormones do in fact induce growth and release chemicals into the body that rebuild cells, synthesize proteins, and enhance immunity, leaving the body even stronger and healthier. How to do something that sucks every day. This is really important, and this is probably the key to 75 Hard. I don't know if Andy's ever read this book, but if I knew where his address, I would definitely send him a copy because it's very helpful. Also, I have Andy Frisella's book, 75 Hard, which I'm going to start reading now that I've finished the Embrace the Suck book. So it's difficult for most of us to compare ourselves to people like David Goggins, and some other gentleman in here named Lewis, world-class athletes, top scholars and musicians, astronauts, and award-winning rodeo clowns. The challenge is that we often engage in activities that have no real connection to our passions, purpose, values, or goals. It's about doing the right things that suck. It's about doing the right things that suck. People choose jobs that leave them unfulfilled, stay in relationships that will only end in suffering, hold grudges that only cause more pointless pain, right? So how do you do the right things that suck every day in order to overcome adversity, exceed your goals, and live an extraordinary life? How do you win, right? Step one, list your top 20 personal and professional goals. Narrow the list down to 5 or 6 goals. So your top 20 goals should be different, two different lists, right? 20 personal goals and 20 professional goals. And keep in mind, like, how these two areas of focus will impact each other, right? Narrow down your list to 5 or 6. Really consider the goals that have real meaning to you, that really you are so passionate about that if somebody were to tell you you could never do these things, you'd probably be kind of upset or feel some type of way, as they say these days. Define the actions necessary to achieve each goal. As I mentioned before, you want to pay off your car, backwards plan, right? Car's paid off, title's in your hand. How are you going to get there? How many Starbucks coffees are you going to drink? Or how many Starbucks coffees are you not going to drink in order to save the extra capital that you need so that you can pay off your car in X amount of time, right? I did this calculation actually at the beginning of the year, and I decided to not do this because my car payment isn't that high, but I would have to basically pay double what I have left in order to finish paying it this year. So this, the book also says, according for this step, the book says, make a list of 5 or 6 specific actions. Let's not worry about the time-bound nature of these activities yet. Reflect on each action and identify elements that make you uncomfortable, choosing the right things that suck. And then start practicing the right things that suck. Now you have 5 or 6 personal and professional goals, right, from the list of 20 of each, with 1 or 2 things that suck assigned to them. You love Starbucks. It would suck for you to have to buy less Starbucks or less donuts, right? Put this list on your desk anywhere that's visible on a regular basis. I highly recommend this book. It's a great read. The text is kind of large, which is great for me because I'm a slow reader, but it was really engaging. And it's been a long time since I've actually read a book cover to cover. It's probably been years. I'm a big fan of audiobooks, especially when I used to commute a long time. And those used to be my jam. I used to just sit on the train and do that. Or I would just do homework when I started going back to school. It's on to everyone's favorite section of the episode, potentially. And that's story time with Marco. Shout out to my boys, Donnie and Brian, for giving me that idea. If y'all want to continue to listen, I highly appreciate that. Share the podcast with your friends and family. Subscribe. Rate the podcast. You know, leave a review. Let me know what you think. Be nice. Or not. I don't care. Give me your honest opinion. You think it sucks? Say that. You think it's awesome? Also say that. But 75 Hard, as y'all know, is a program I've been doing. I'm currently on day 17. It's mostly a mental challenge, more than a physical challenge, although there is a physical aspect, which includes 2 workouts a day, one of which has to be outside. But those are 75 Hard is part of the willful suffering that I'm going to be putting myself through in order to gain some resiliency or build it, because as I mentioned before, I feel like I've gotten too soft as I've been working remotely, and I feel like life has just probably gotten just too easy. Not to say like, oh my God, I don't have anything to worry about. Like, you know, I'm doing all these things, but, and you know, I have less and less time basically to relax and do nothing, but it's good. I'd rather be busy. And so the activities include reading 10 pages a day, which is how I got through this book in less than 17 days, actually, because I overread the 10 pages on a couple days because there were mental models I wanted to finish reading. And the requisite for the book that you have to read on 75 Hard, it has to be nonfiction. And I think it has to be some kind of development book for personal growth or professional growth. It can't be fiction. So I was reading Sun Tzu before, The Art of War, but there's some debate about whether all of the accounts in that book are factual or fictional. So I decided to change that up. I really wasn't aware of that. I was like, oh yeah, Sun Tzu is a real person. So I was like, this is a great nonfiction novel. So also follow a diet. I've been back on intermittent fasting. Say what you will about intermittent fasting, but I really enjoy it. It works well for me. Always, of course, consult your doctor if you have any problems before you start a workout regimen, program, or some kind of, you know, advanced or modified diet of any kind. And a gallon, drinking it, consuming a gallon of water a day. So I got my half gallon jug here, ASMR time, and I drink two of those a day. Sometimes I get to it earlier, sometimes I don't. And sometimes I drink more, honestly, depending on how thirsty I am and how much caffeine I've had, because I tend to have a lot of caffeine. Sticking to a hard program is my elected daily suffering. The right thing, choosing the right thing that sucks for me to build up my resilience and mental toughness, because I've thought about this program. It's been around for, I think, 2 years now. I could be wrong. But, you know, I'd seen it on Instagram, people sharing their, you know, which day they were on, etc. A couple of friends of mine have done it. Some people I know are considering it. And I think that you should stop considering it and just do it. And be honest with yourself. If you cheat the program in any way, just start over, because those are the rules, right? And you follow the rules, and doing the right thing that sucks is difficult, right? Now, since I'm done with the Embrace the Suck book, the 75 Hard book is the next one I'll be reading. We'll do a couple more sections of this book in the next episode. Also, if you want to get some cool merch, not podcast related, but I'm going to make some podcast related merch. And also, the eagle-eyed among you will have noticed that the podcast name has changed and the podcast logo has also changed. So Hands in the Chile is a very comical name for a podcast. At least I think so. And it's kind of clever because someone that I met uses an expression that's somehow related to chili. And I think it means like to like get in someone's business or like, you know, put your foot down or something like that. And I was like, I've never heard this before. And I wanted the podcast to have some kind of military affiliated slogan as its name. But I was like, man, that's so cheesy. That's so dumb. You know, and then I was like, well, if it's too military oriented, people aren't going to listen. You know, if it's too this, you know, exactly, blah, blah, blah. So I figured like, hey, you know what? It's time to niche down. And as part of my standards and my goals for this year, I wanted to narrow down the niche of the podcast, and I wanted to nail down a good title for the podcast. I mean, name, same thing, similar things. So Hands in the Chile, my family's from Chile. I was born in South America. So Hands in the Chile is the saying I've heard in the military, my military job. And so Hands in the Chile, I think, is a very apt name. So if you were curious about that, that's what the name is all about. And surprisingly, it is a lot harder to find images of chili and like pots and pans and stuff and the right types of hands and stuff on Canva. So I'm actually kind of happy with the way that the logo came out. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Hope you enjoy the show. Until next time, y'all, stay safe, take care, and embrace the suck. Peace.